Julian, I'm going to throw it open to the floor now. I thought that was really, really interesting with a variety of viewpoints there. Quite like to invite questions from the floor. There's a roving mic, or two mics, which are going to run around. Question at the front, Claire.
Hello, my name's Anne Fennell from Mothers at Home Matter. Just to address a few points, on the child, the higher rate tax, the child benefit. I did a simple calculation when that came in that we would be better off as a family if my husband reduced his income by £20,000. So that may be one reason why you're seeing not many people take it up. And to look at it another way, say you're on about £50,000 and you needed to earn a bit more money. For every pound you earned, you lost 60p of that. But if your wife went to work instead, she would get the whole tax free, and so she would be sort of forced out to work instead. So if you had caring responsibilities, it was much financially, it's much better for the second earner to go out to work. Again, that's the same case much lower down the income scale, as you were saying with the tax and credit problem. That it's very, very difficult for the main earner, usually the husband or the man, to earn more, because for every pound he earns, he loses 76 pence of it. And so to earn £3,000, he has to basically earn £12,500. That makes it very difficult. The other thing you said about it is better to be apart than together. So I think it's about £9,000 better to be apart than together. So I think that's another thing you're seeing in the taxation system. And just one last thing. I think you made some very, very good points about, you know, looking at why that second earner may not be earning. And you did talk about the sort of income. I would be slightly reluctant to dismiss the idea of a family completely. Because I think, you know, you do come together and you as a family, and you're there to raise the children. And for many people, it's not his income and her income, it's a family income. And I think we've totally lost that through independent taxation.
The high income child benefit tax is a pet hate of mine of epic proportions. When it was being brought in, I had a rather disagreeable exchange with my local MP, who patronisingly sent me an email to compliment me on the fact that my daughter was in the top 15% of earners. And pardon the French, I responded to him asking whether he was taking the piss. Because she was in a situation where she was just getting by. And I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm not the only parent in the room who has ended up paying the higher income child tax benefit, because most years it's been in, I've had to help my daughter out on that, even though, you know, she's married and so on. And I just think, you know, families who aren't in that situation where they've got someone who can help them must be really struggling. And I know that from my own experience. In 1990, the revenue moved me down from Scotland. I didn't get any pay rise, but I had to quadruple my mortgage. And we were just getting by on child benefit. We were just surviving on it. Mm. And I dread to think what life would have been like had that tax been there at that time. So it's a real hate of mine. And my local MP then was stupid enough to send a naughty text to a Times journalist who was undercover, and that was the end of him. So I haven't heard from him since. Stuart, Fran?
Could I just come in on your last point, which I think is really important, and I absolutely did not mean to dismiss family in any way. Interestingly, when I went round doing qualitative research with couples about their finances, the phrase that everybody kept using, and this was low to moderate income families, the phrase everybody kept using was all in one pot. So you said, how do you manage your finances? All in one pot. And that really, really was the big thing. And then you get underneath that and you find that actually money has social meanings, and different bits of money are used for different things. The fact that different people have it is important. And so I think that's, you know, I absolutely agree with you that family is important. But the other thing I think, which again, we've seen from research, is that actually, in order to commit to a long-term relationship, quite a lot of women these days would like an independent income in order to make that commitment, if you see what I mean. And the problem with something like the single payment of universal credit, for example, so it's just one payment into one account, so you have to decide which account you're going to pay it into. You imagine yourself as a lone parent in a council house with two children from a previous partner, about to start committed coupledom with another partner, trying it out, he's going to move in. Who do you decide gets all the universal credit? Him? He's not the father of the children. He's not the tenant of the flat. You, but you're inviting him in and saying you can't have any income at all because it's all got to be in my account. You may not have a joint account yet because you're just starting. So I think, you know, it's important that it's not that independent income actually works against family at all. I think quite often it's actually the autonomy that's needed to have a flourishing relationship, if you see what I mean. So I don't think it's a threat. I don't think it's a threat.
This is really just a sort of odd point, but when I was doing a bit of research for this, I actually read that most married women or women in sort of long-term relationships had a slush fund that they hid from their partners, and it was called a running off fund. And I was sort of reading it, I was thinking my husband would probably have actually given some funds towards that at points. And then after that, it was much, much sort of later, I suddenly thought, I wonder if he's got a running off fund too.
My name is Warwick Lineford. I work for Policy Exchange at the moment, but I was the Chancellor of the Exchequer Special Advisor when independent taxation was brought in. I was Nigel Lawson's advisor and was then John Major's Special Advisor. And I think it might be helpful to remember how independent taxation came about. This was a very substantial tax transfer to higher income households. The only way in which you could actually bring it about without a very substantial loss to the exchequer was to essentially help better off households. In terms of whether there should be the transferable allowance, there was quite a strong feminist lobby. If you remember, Nigel issued a green paper. There was an enormous row over that green paper. Part of the row was that some of the feminists didn't want that transferable allowance because they said it would actually reduce labour market participation of women. Also, the Prime Minister was very concerned, as she put it, about the mill girl in Lancashire going to work and a posh neighbour down the road who had a husband who could pay for her, who would actually be better off with the transferable allowance. So there was a lot of that going on in the background, and it wasn't simply, oh, Mrs. Thatcher wouldn't do it. There was a much stronger issue to do with the role of women in society and transfer of resources to higher income households. I think it's also worth remembering the married couples allowance, which was also paid to lone parents with children. I used to love it when bishops used to talk about the importance of the family and how, and they didn't seem to realise it went to lone parents too. But that wasn't really brought in for any other reason than to protect losers. There was a certain category of loser, if you didn't have it, and it was always intended to wither on the vine, although I don't think Nigel very helpfully helped matters along by cracking some aphorism about, however, I think, Mr. Speaker, one's quite right to take account of marriage within the tax system. But actually, it was very much a throwaway line and was always intended to go. The other thing which I find very interesting from the conversation we've listened to this evening, which I think has been extremely helpful, is this difficulty that on the one hand, there's complex tax matters for higher income households and for women who've got assets and have got money, and there's the position of households that are being helped through the benefit system. That does seem to be very different indeed. And I think it's worth pointing out that the reason why Nigel eventually worked on this, he was under intense pressure from a lot of very privileged women. The wives of the cabinet, for example, Lady Fowler, would go and give interviews in the press, and this became quite an embarrassment to the Chancellor and to the Conservative government. And when they went out and about to the kind of sort of summer cocktail party that we envy, they would encounter representatives of that kind of household, and that played a big part, I think, in colouring the Chancellor's view.
It was ever thus.
Can I just kind of... I mean, that is very interesting background. it certainly ties up with the perception that people had, some of people had in Somerset House at the time. I remember one letter going into the press from the wife of a senior revenue official, saying that, you know, whatever the priorities were, she didn't think, and presumably that was the view of her husband as well, that privatising a tax break for high-income couples was the most important thing. I would like to come back, you see, to what actually happened. I know it was presented this way, that it was never intended to be a permanent feature, and your explanation of this is very helpful. But reality has been that the high-income couples have done very well out of independent taxation. But the great mass of ordinary people, like our bus driver family, and there are a lot of them, it has been disastrous. And you know, I can't emphasize too strongly how awful it must be to be completely locked in by a system which takes a lot of tax from you and then plunges you into a system over which you have no control. I hear what Fran says, and I agree with her in many respects, but we should start with a sensible tax system, get the foundation of that right, and then ask ourselves what additional support we should provide. It seems to me crazy to have a tax system which is taking significant amounts of income tax from people who are really not at all well off. That's not what happens in France or Germany. I think we do read to, it's hard, but in the 1980s, people were prepared to do the hard thinking. And I think we have to do the hard thinking again. I don't know what the right answer is. I've got guesses, but we do need to do that thinking because real people are really suffering. It's like the Windrush thing all over again. It's only when you actually see the impact on real families that you begin to realize that maybe your fine principles don't quite work.
Keith, Robert.
Right, I've got two hands up.
Thanks very
Robert,
much.
Robert, I take it you're deferring to...
It seems to me that taxing families and independent taxation are in fact contradictory concepts. My recollection is different to other people's. My recollection is that independent taxation was introduced because women felt that they ought to be treated as persons rather than as adjuncts to their husbands. And unfortunately at the time, there was an awful lot of single earner families, and it was felt inappropriate to go the whole way to achieve independent taxation. So we ended up with some sort of a mishmash. And as we tinker with it year by year, it just gets worse and worse. And I would question why anybody thinks the tax system is the right way to deal with helping families. Because if you want to help the poor, and I'm sure we all want to help people in serious poverty, we ought to be giving some targeted help. And the tax system is not the right way to target help. The tax system has to look at very broad brush principles. And I'd like to ask the panel why they think the tax system ought to cater for families.
I just think the tax system should be fair. I think we should be paying tax depending on how well off we are. I don't think it's a question of helping one group rather than another, but let's start with sharing the tax burden fairly amongst us. And there's the analysis of household incomes, which the government produced year after year, Department of Work and Pensions, they measure standard of living on a household basis. And we have to, somehow or other, to reconcile that with the principles which we want to hold on to of independent taxation of married women. I believe that you can find a technical solution, but we've got to work at it.
Fran, can I just bring Keith in and then perhaps we can deal
with
both?
Yeah, I was just going to answer the question. But
ask the flip side of Robert's question. Leaving aside what I think are the obvious administrative advantages, are there other benefits of actually fully integrating the benefits and the tax system into a single coherent code?
I knew somebody would ask that.
Right, Fran, you were saying.
Right. Great. I was going to come back to, I mean, I think I made it rather clear that I didn't think the tax system was the best way of adjusting for family responsibilities. We have a brilliant way of adjusting for family responsibilities. It's called child benefit. It works really well. It's simple, effective, and well understood, as a Conservative Chancellor said not that long ago. And were it not for the high-income child benefit charge, it would still be simple, effective, and well understood. Unfortunately, it isn't anymore. And I think it isn't anymore because there is a different standard dealing with benefits from there is dealing with tax allowances, and I think that's a shame. On the other hand, I do very much agree with Don about some of the issues of targeted help, as you put it, but means-tested help, as he and I might put it, which results in high withdrawal rates for people, which are called effective marginal tax rates because, if you like, they've got somewhat similar effects. So my own personal view would be that we should do as much as possible through non-means-tested, as I say, individually-based benefits, including benefits for absence from employment for caring responsibilities, such as maternity, parental leave, and caring leave for people who are looking after disabled and elderly people. And I think that would be a better way of dealing with this than the tax system.
I could just come in there. I mean, I think in principle, if we could have one system that sort of sorted out everybody's tax and benefits thing, I think it would be a sort of wonderful plan. I'm just not sure that's going to be possible within my lifetime or perhaps within the sort of relative lifetimes of the DWP and HMRC.
So I think there are a couple of issues there, and let me kind of work toward the question of integrating taxes and benefits. I think, as Fran mentioned, I think the issues raised by the family that Don was talking about that are several and varied, and things to do with tax credit overpayments, and things to do with poverty and inequality, and so on. And there are certainly issues with that and with means testing about which I've written and talked plenty before, so I don't want to go into too much detail on that. In terms of taking the family into account, rather than coming off the fence as to whether or how the tax system is the right tool to do that, and I think what is clear and where the UK is somewhat different from many other countries is that there has been a clear move towards saying we are going to provide support for family responsibilities, not through allowances for family circumstances in the tax system, as many countries like France and Germany do, but through the benefit and tax credit system. Now, that has the advantage that it targets support at low-income families with children better than you can through the tax system and better than you can through universal benefit. It is therefore a cheaper way of doing it. And I mean, I think in some ways the challenge I would put to Fran is that the lots of things that you were suggesting would cost a lot of money and they need paying for. And yes, universal benefits, so for everyone is lovely, but it's expensive. Now, there are downsides to targeting support closely through means testing, both in terms of the work incentive it creates, work disincentives, I should say, it creates, and in terms of the various practical downsides associated with means testing as well. And again, I don't really want to come off the fence as to how we should do that, but I think that there is a legitimate case to be made for that position on the trade-off. Now, one consequence of providing support for families, for family responsibilities through means tested tax credits and benefits rather than through the tax system is that it does create it increases the prevalence of low-income families both paying tax and receiving benefits, which I think is a lot of the problem that Dom was talking about, and does strike many people as being very odd. And I think clearly other things equal, it seems pretty undesirable to have that churn in the system. It would just be nicer if we weren't taxing in the first place rather than taxing them and then giving them either some of the money or all of the money back and then more. I think partly, again, that comes down to the benefit system is better suited to targeting more closely. So the more you want to do that targeting, the more you might want to use the benefit system. I think particularly when we were doing the Merley's review about 10 years ago, we looked quite closely at this question of tax and benefit integration. I think where we came down was we thought there is a good case for integration within the tax system, and particularly merging income tax and NICs. We thought there was a good case for integration in the benefit system along the lines in principle of universal credit, not being put off by the rather cack-handed way it's been implemented in practice. In my view, they've basically taken a perfectly good idea and done their very best to ruin it. But we thought that there was much less of a case for integrating taxes and benefits. And that is because, unlike income tax and NICs, and unlike the various means-tested benefits and tax credits, they are trying to do slightly different things. And as a result of that, they have slightly different properties. And I think there are two of those. One is we have, broadly speaking, an individual tax system and a jointly assessed benefit system. And you can't really integrate them without integrating the unit of assessment. So if you were going to say, I'm happy with an entirely jointly assessed tax system or an entirely individually assessed benefit system, then you could have a stab at it. I'll say, I think you can make arguments in those directions, but that is an argument that needs to be made on other grounds as well as the kind of convenience of avoiding churn. The other thing which we haven't talked about this evening, which is also relevant, is that broadly speaking, we assess tax, or at least income tax, on an annual basis, and we assess benefits on a much shorter term basis, because as far as possible, in terms of measuring ability to pay for tax purposes, we like to do that in as long a period as possible to measure your true ability to pay. Ideally, you might do it over a lifetime, but a year seems at least better than a week or two. Whereas often we want to provide benefits for people who have short-term needs, even if their longer-term ability to pay might be higher. And there, I think, there's less of an argument for saying, actually, we should move one over to another. And those who remember the trouble that the government got into in 2003 with the introduction of child and working tax credits, where they tried to do something in between with assessing tax credits based on your annual income, but with rapid adjustments, and ended up with problems like overpayments and so on, which have been somewhat alleviated but never really gone away. For those kinds of reasons, I think it's actually very difficult to integrate them completely. But how far you can avoid the situation where some people are both paying tax and getting benefits, well, as long as they're assessed differently, there are always going to be some degree of overlap. You might be able to reduce it, but it means getting into other trade-offs to do with targeting, to do with how much you want joint assessment versus individual assessment, and all of those other issues as well. I think to some extent, actually separating out the different issues and the different problems we're trying to solve, but recognising that you can't do all of them at once and therefore there isn't a magic solution to everything, is where I would go.
Thank you, Stuart. Well, our time has evaporated. I'd like to thank all of the panel. I'll start the other way. Gillian, thank you very much. Fran, thank you. Dawn, Stuart, if we could thank them in the usual way. Drinks. I think tonight has brought home to me a point I did make last month when I became president, that the need for the Low Income Tax Reform Group is as strong today as it was 20 years ago when that was set up. And I think as tax advisors, I think we're all well placed to try and make these points to the people that matter. Thank you very much.